he had
said that for the motivation of toward being watchful over oneself, there are several categories, the least of which is someone who may not be able to conceptualize abstractions as why should one should do good and avoid wrong, but at the very least, a person should be afraid of the consequences of one's behavior that we usually think of as punishment. And we had talked about the concept of punishment as being the consequences inherent within a wrong act. And the consequences inherent within a wrong act depend on whoever is doing it. The more spiritual a person will be, the more one is held to account. And even if one does not look at this as an external punishment, but something inherent within the act itself, one can also appreciate that what might be a sin for one person would not be considered a sin for another. As for example, I remember many years ago, I had a phonograph that played satisfactorily. And then when hi-fi came out, the sound was so much richer that I bought a hi-fi. But then I found out that whereas previously I had been able to walk without paying much attention to the heaviness of my steps, now when I walked into them with the hi-fi, I had to tiptoe, because the mechanism was so sensitive that just a slight vibration would cause the needle to jump. Now, on the old set, you didn't have to watch yourself. The needle didn't jump when you walked in. Right? It wasn't so sensitive to reactive vibrations. The sound, the quality of the sound wasn't that good, but you didn't have to watch out. And that's true of almost anything, that the more sensitive a system is, the more you have to watch out how it's going to be affected. And something which would not register at all on a less sensitive system is going to affect a more sensitive system. By the same token, something that would not be out of character for a person of lower spiritual status is not going to affect him as it would for someone who is of a higher spiritual status. So, he says, he listed the fact that Avram had to take the consequences of what for him was an infraction, and Yaakov did, and now we're up to Yosef. The Medrash says that the Yosef, l'fi she'amar l'shar ha'mashkim, because he said to the officer appointed over the drink, when he interpreted his dream, he interpreted his dream favorably, Yosef then said to him, you're going to be returned to your post, kim z'chatani itcha, but please remember me with yourself when you get out, and speak favorably to me before Parak, because I was put into this dungeon innocently. And so he asked the Shar HaMashkim to intercede for him, and because he had relied on a human being's intervention and not totally on Hashem, he shown him 2 additional years of imprisonment were added on to him. Kimamor Hamzal, as the Chazal say in Medrash. Now, this is a point which requires a great deal of fine tuning. We say that Hashem tells us, "Uverachticha b'chol asher ta'aseh," I will bless you in everything that you do, which means that a person is required to do something for himself, and not rely, Shem is going to do everything for me. In Shem Chamalanes, you don't rely on miracles. You're supposed to do something better, you're supposed to do something natural. But however, to realize it is not the natural thing that is going to, it is not your own work that is going to provide results. You do something and Hashem will then bless your efforts. How much you should do, that is a very sensitive point that has to be decided individually, and that has to be decided with a das toya, because a person himself may not be able to draw the line correctly. It has been said that working for a parnosa is the curse that was given to Adam before the chetzo the malishim, before Adam sinned. Everything was provided for him, and the two malachim were his servants, two angels were his servants, and gave him everything he needed. And all he would have had to do is to do the mitzvahs that Hashem would tell him. As a result of his sin, he was cursed. Now you're going by the sweat of your brow, you'll have to eat your bread. So essentially, work is a curse. And the logic is, why would anyone want to indulge in a curse any more than the bare minimum? So, a person is required to do something for his livelihood and to trust in Hashem. But it is wrong to sit back and say, well, I trust in Hashem, therefore I'm not going to move out of the house today. Because a person is required to do something. Well, since that is so, then why was Yosef punished? Yosef trusted in Hashem, but he had an opportunity to do something, al pidel hateva, to do something natural way, and he asked Yisrael Mashkim to intervene. So why was this a transgression for Yosef? Now, first of all, what we can say is that what would not be a transgression for us would be a transgression for Yosef, because Yosef was standing at a level of spirituality and a level of Kedusha that for him that was too much. He should have done something, right? But that was already too much, and he trusted too much in the intervention. Now, who is to say that he trusted too much? There we have the Chazal who say for Yosef this was too much. He could have gotten along with less. Another interpretation, though, is that yes, you're supposed to do for yourself, but if you should be bright enough to see that if Hashem is sending you a signal that He is going to do it for you, then you just leave it to Him. The dreams of the two officers that came to Yosef should have understood that this was a sign. This was an unusual thing, and that Hashem was setting something up. And once Hashem had given him a sign that he was setting something up, at that point for him to ask for intervention was not right. So there are various interpretations given as for why Yosef was held accountable for it. But be that as it may, here you see that Yosef HaTzadik was held accountable for something which appeared to be a very trivial transaction. Furthermore, Yosef Atzmoy, al shechona desoviv lirishusa shomokim, because Yosef took upon himself to embalm Yankov without having asked Hashem's permission, oy lefisha shama avdecha avinu v'shosak, or because five times the brothers referred to Yaakov as Avdecha Ovinu, your servant, our father. And he did not react to that. The Makid Isla, these are two opinions. But these are two opinions as why Meislif Neyachov, as why he died before his older brothers. Because being that he was younger than them, he should have survived them. And yet he died long before them. And this was as a consequence of his either because he embalmed Yaakov without authority to do so from Hashem, or because he was silent when he heard his brothers refer to his father as Avdecha, and he did your servant, and he did not protest. Now, neither of these appear to be such major transgressions as to cost him years of his life. And yet, these were held against Yosef, again indicating that there are no trivia. David HaMelech, Levishir, Kogel HaDibre Teire Zemiras. He refers in Tehillim, Zemiras Hayo Lichukecha. Your words, your laws, your ordinances of Torah are to me like a beautiful song. And this was considered an improper expression. The attitude toward Torah, I mean, his intention was good, right? But the attitude for Torah is not, it is a beautiful song. That's an improper metaphor to use. And therefore, Nana, she was punished, and Yishol B'Dvar Uzo, he was punished that when they moved the ark, and they moved it with a wagon drawn by horses, and the ark was going to slip off the wagon, and one of the people who was there to guard it rushed over to prevent the wagon from falling to the ground, and he was struck dead. Why? Because the Torah says in Chumash that the ark is to be carried on the shoulders. It is not to be put on wagons. And that is something that if you learn the Chumash, a six-year-old child who learns Chumash reads that the ark is not to be carried by wagons like everything else, like all the other things in the sanctuary, but the ark is supposed to be carried on shoulders by people. Right? And Hashem said to David, you refer to my Torah as Zemiras, as a song, you will see that you're going to overlook a part of Torah which even a child who goes to Cheder knows.
I'm sure he meant it as being pleasant.
Oh, no question. No question that David HaMelech as an expression of how beautiful Torah is. And yet, it was an improper, so your intent was good. But for David HaMelech, in his level, this was held as an infraction.
Yeah, we can use it.
We say the post again. For us, it's good. Yeah, for us, it's good to say it's a miracle for Kepha. For him, it wasn't. So he was punished with the incident of Uzov and Isav of Osim Chosay and his joyous triumph of bringing the Ark back into Yerushalayim was disturbed. Michal, when David HaMelech was married to Michal Bas Shaul, Michal the daughter of Shaul. And when David brought the Ark back to Yerushalayim, he led the procession and danced wildly and joyously in front of the ark, and she considered this a lack of dignity. The king should have marched in a stately, royal fashion and not danced. And David's response was, in front of the ark, there is no king. Everybody is equal. I am king in the palace when I sit with subjects, but in front of the ark of Hashem, there is no such thing as act royally. But she had criticized him for this. When she chastised David because he had danced publicly in front of the ark, Nensha, she was punished that she did not have any child until she died in childbirth, but she did not live to see a child. Because he revealed his treasure house to the officers of the king of Babel of Babylon, Nigzar al Bonov, it was decreed that his children, they were going to be servants to the king, subject to the king of Babylon. The Rabim Kaela Meyaid, and we could go on listing many, many such cases of where great people were held accountable for what appears to be trivia. Ubeperek HaKol Hayoven, in the chapter HaKol Hayoven in Chagiga, Amru, the Gemara says, Rav Yochanan kan have a motel haikra, when Rav Yochanan would come in his studies to this verse in Malachi, Ave Boche, he would weep. The Pasuk says, V'karapti Aleichem L'mishpat, Hashem says, I will draw close to you in judgment. V'hayisi Eidim Emahir, and I will be like a quick witness to testify against you. So Rabbi Yochanan said, Evet Shesheklim Olav Kalas Kechamuros, a servant whose master holds him responsible for minor things as well as for grave things, Takoni Yeshloi, is there any way that he can possibly be saved? Is there any remedy for him? Ubevadai, the Sata says, Ein Kavana, certainly Ein Kavana Samayma, the Gemara does not mean to say, Shia Oynish Ashtei and Echod, that minor things are dealt with as severely as more serious offenses. That's not what the Pasuk means. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu Eino Mishalem Ela Mida Keneged Mida. Hashem responds and rewards or punishes measure for measure. What he means, minor incidents are dealt with just as grave incidents are dealt with. Omnu and you know what he means by that. Shall inyan mishkal amasim, as far as considering one's actions, kach oilas bekafa kalas kemeichach mures. Minor trivia or minor infractions are put on the balance just as more serious ones. In other words, nothing is overlooked. They don't have the same weight, but they are not dismissed. Ki lo yashkichu achamures es hakalos, just because a person has done more serious offenses, more serious sins, that does not mean that the minor ones are going to be overlooked and say, well, look, there's no point in dealing with these trivia things. He's done so many more serious things. He says nothing is overlooked. The heavenly judge will not overlook anything. He will not overlook the, quote, trivia, just like he will not overlook the more grave ones. El al kulam yashgiach. Everything will be considered, everything will be looked at, bifakeach, behashvoa, echod, and looked at in a fair way, in an equal way. Ladun kol echot mehem, to consider each one on its own merits, ulahanish achakoch, al kol echot kifimashu, and punishment will be given out according to each incident, whatever it merits. This is what Shlomo HaMelech says in Kehelet. Here's Kol Maaseh Elohim Yoved B'Mishpat, that every deed God will bring into judgment. Just like Hashem does not fail to reward for every good incident, for every good action, no matter how minor it may have appeared, neither will he refrain from judging and to chastise every wrong thing, regardless of how minor it may appear. This is to contradict those who prefer to deceive themselves, the lachshoiv, and to think shelayal odin bochu bedino advorim akalim, that Hashem is going to ignore and overlook minor transactions, v'leika cheshbon aleim, and will not hold them into account. He says that's not so. Aleklolahu, the rule is kolayma kadosh bochu baton. Anybody who says Hashem overlooks, his life can be overlooked. The Chenamur, the Chachamim also say, Yimoy Malacha Yetzahara, if you hear the Yetzahara say to you, Chata, go ahead and sin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Meichala, Hashem will forgive you. He says, Al Tish Malai, don't pay any attention to this. Absolutely wrong. V'zad of a poshu to Mevoira, this is clear and evident. Ki hine keil emes Hashem, Hashem is the true God. V'hu mash'om ha-mashah ben al-vashalem, this is why Moshe said, "Hasul tamim po'aloi," that Hashem is perfect in His ways. Ki chol drochav mishpot, all of His ways are judgment. Kei lamuno, He's a trusted God, vein ovel, and there is no inequity. Ki kevish Hakadosh Baruch Hu roitzeh b'mishpot, since Hashem desires that there be true justice demands kachu oiver ala mishpot, Hamalim as Ayin min Achayva Kamay min Aschus, just as Hashem is judge of justice, ignoring the bad would be just as wrong, as unjust as ignoring the good. Al kein, therefore, imishpat hu reitze, if since Hashem does want justice, tzorach sheyiten lechol ish kitocha v'chim alolav v'tachlis ha'kdikdum, he must give each person the results of his, the consequences of one's actions, with the utmost precision, ben atov ben amudah, whether it's for good or otherwise. Bahainu, that's why he means kele muna be'inovel, that he is a trusted God, and there is no inequity. Tzadik v'yoshahu, he is fair and just. Shefil shehul azal, that means fair and just to everyone. La tzadikim ala rishayim, to the righteous as well as to the wicked. Ki kachi amida, that is the attribute of Hashem. V'ala kol hudon, he judges everything. V'al kol chetu manish, and he punishes for everything. V'en lihimolit, and there is no escape from the absolute justice of Hashem. There was a Talmud Chacham who was approached with by an insurance salesman to buy insurance, and he said he didn't want to. He says because he says the system of Hashem, Hashem's system of justice, is absolute, and Hashem will not do anything to punish anyone which will have harmful consequences to someone else. He says, I know I don't deserve anything. He says, the way I behave, I forfeited my life. He says, the only thing is I know that I have hopes that Hashem will not punish me for it, because what are my wife and children to suffer for if I was wrong? He says, so I am kept alive in order to provide for them, because they don't deserve the punishment. He says, but if I'm going to do something to provide, then if I'm not around, they will be provided for. He says, I'm taking away my last defense. He had said that the last time we learned that the lowest level of motivation should be to avoid punishment, and therefore a person should conduct himself properly, because improper behavior will have harmful consequences, and that everything that a person does is taken into account. And that there's no such things as trivia that one can say will be overlooked. Hashem doesn't overlook anything, and he listed numerous situations where even some of the greatest tzaddikim were held accountable for what appears to have been rather minor infractions. And he says that mishpat, judgment, requires that there is no overlooking of anything. Just like it would be improper to overlook something good that the person has done and withhold reward for it, regardless of how minor it is. Similarly, it would be improper to withhold the harmful consequences and protect the person from the harmful consequences and ask Hashem to intervene, so that the harmful consequences of a trivial thing should not occur. The Im Taima, if you will say, well, if that's the way the system of judgment works, that there's absolute justice and nothing is overlooked, then imken midas harachamim lo mahim emetes. So what are we talking about when we talk about Hashem as being a rachamon, and that Hashem conducts the world with the attribute of mercy? How does mercy enter into this if you say that judgment is absolute? Every minor little thing, nothing is overlooked, and a person is held accountable for everything. And what is this rachman we're talking about? Hatshuva, the answer. Vada, it's right, it's certain. That midas harachmim hikiyuma shel olam. That midas harachmim, the mercy, is the mainstay, the foundation upon which the world can exist. Shelahaya oimed zu losai klo leklo. It could not have existed, the world could not have existed with absolute din, untempered by rachmim. The afal became, even though rachmim is operative, ein midas hadin loike, that does not deduct or distract from midas hadin. Now, in what way is that? He says, the reason for this, kilefishuas hadin, according to absolute, unmitigated din, unmitigated harsh judgment, it would be appropriate that immediately when a person has done a sin, he is immediately faced with his consequences, without any delay at all. Just like when a person eats poison, its effect, a lethal poison, is immediate. Similarly, since doing an aveira is lethal to the person, lethal to the neshama, if absolute midas hadin were in place, then the effects would be immediate. There'd be no delay at all. V'gam sheha'oinesh atzmo yeh b'charoinav. The consequences, the punishment, would come with a wrath, without any kind of mercy, whatever. Kuro, as would be fitting, as would be appropriate, according to the Midas Adin, for someone who was defiant, or intentionally defiant of Hashem. And finally, v'shelo yiyatik olachet klal, and that there would be no way of rectifying anything that was done wrong. Jehine be'emes, because the truth is, so how can a person rectify something once it has been done and it's irreversible? I mean, we take for granted that you did tshuva, but think of it a minute. Where does tshuva fit in to reverse an action that has been done? If a person killed somebody else, he had an adulterous relationship, what's he going to do? Make the past undone? You don't change the past. Can a person remove a fact, a accomplished fact, from reality? Once it's happened, it's happened. So he says, midas hadin then, if it were absolute and not tempered by rachman, would demand three things. One, that the consequences of the person's behavior be immediate. No postponement, no suspended judgment. Secondly, that he have the consequences of his actions with their full force. And thirdly, that there's no such thing as retracting an incident that's already occurred. Something which is reality is reality, you don't retract. Omna midas harachmim, where rachmim comes in, he understands that enables hefech hashloisha dvorim shezachana. That enables the opposite of these three things to occur, the three things that we said would be for absolute din. Dahainu, that is, sheyutan zman lachoite, there is a period of delay given, a suspended period of suspended judgment, lo yikochet min ha'oretz miyad kishechotah. And so that the individual does not immediately suffer the consequences of his behavior, and that there is a grace period that the individual is given, which pure din would not permit. The fact that there is a grace period, that is from Rachman. Secondly, v'she'oinish atzmo lo yir adachale, and that the consequences, the punishment, does not come with the full force that din would demand, so that it is mitigated. And thirdly, v'she'hatshuva tinosein lachoitim v'chesed gomel, that tshuva can be given to someone who has committed a sin, meaning not only that he is forgiven, shetechoshev akiras harotzon, that when he regrets what he has done and he extirpates his will from having done it, the will of having done it, that will be considered ka'akiras hamaisa, equivalent to the act actually having been undone. And that's what tshuva accomplishes. Even though the act is physically here, right, a proper regret of tshuva allows it, the act, to be considered undone. Dahainu, meaning, shebihiyosh hashav makir eschetoy, when the person who repents recognizes the wrong that he did, umoyda boy, and he admits it, umizboinen al ra'osoy, and he understands that what he did was wrong, b'shavu mischaret alav charoto gemura de meikora, and he repents and regrets having done it, and it is a absolute true remorse, kecharotos haneder mamish, just as one can have a oath, a promise removed, if he can demonstrate that the promise was made under false assumptions. He did not realize this and that at the time that he made the promise, so therefore it was not a promise with full, proper intention. It was done under false pretenses. And then he's then released from the oath. Shehu misnachem legamre, where he has a sincere regret, and he really has a strong desire, the person who repents really wants that, feels sorry about it, and wishes sincerely that it had never happened, and has a great deal of distress that the thing happened, and he abandons that kind of thing for the future, and not only he abandons it, but he takes precautions that it should never happen again. And all this demonstrates the sincerity of his regret. Hine akiras hadova mirtzoinoi, this extirpation of the incident from his will, with the sincere remorse that he has, yechoshev loy ka'akiras haneder, can be considered just like a neder is removed, umiskapaloi, and he can be forgiven. Now, what he's going to go on to say is that rachamim mitigates din, but not in a manner that it contradicts it. That it is still within the realm of din to allow certain things to happen and still be considered within the realm of din. To overlook, that's not din. Din means that everything is accountable. But it is within the realm of din to allow such things as a grace period. That's rachman, but it's not totally opposed to din. You can accept that there is din, the thing will be dealt with, it's just that I'm giving him a grace period. There is the din can be done without the full force, and rachman then, mercy then, mitigates din so that it does not come with a violence. And thirdly, that there is such a thing as undoing the act. Now, he doesn't say so in so many words, but it's an interesting concept that he several times mentions the similarity to a neda, where the halacha is that if a person has taken an oath to do something or other, or to abstain from something, that, and he regrets having taken the oath, that he comes before a chacham, a scholar, who then investigates the conditions of the oath or the promise. And if the chacham can be satisfied that this was done under false pretenses. Now, had you known at the time that you made the neder that X, Y, and Z would result from it, would you have made the neder then? He says, no, I said none of that. Oh, well, he said, then you were not fully aware of the neder. It was not done with a full heart. It was not done with a absolute intent because there were some things that you were not aware of. And that's like signing a contract without all the conditions having been spelled out to you, where you can say, hey, the guy didn't tell me this is so. Right? This is material to the contract. So that's how neda works. Now, the interesting thing is that the Gemara says that the Torah gives the din of neda, that a person is bound by his oaths and promises. And then the Mishnah says this whole business of hetan adorim, that a neda can be annulled by a chacham, that a husband can annul the dorim of his wife, that the Torah says. But that a chacham can extirpate the neda, that is parches ba'avir. Those halachas, the Gemara, the Mishnah says, those are floating in the air, meaning there's really no evidence source for them in the Torah. And they are halachas of Moshe Misina. They are something which was handed down from Hashem to Moshe orally, and then throughout the generations, the halacha that you can revoke a neda. The Gemara tries to find psukim of support to it. One posuk that we say in davening, Hashem nishbati ve'api. Hashem says, I took an oath in my anger that they will not come to the promised land. Some say it refers to the Meraglim, whatever. So the Gemara says, I took an oath in my anger and I regret. It was done in a moment of anger. Meaning that something done under a moment of anger is not done with full presence of mind. Another pasuk the Gemara says is, the Torah says that if a person has made an oath, lo yachil devora, he has no right to, he does not have the permission to violate that oath. So the Gemara says he cannot violate it, but others can violate it for him, meaning others can render the oath powerless. He cannot do it himself. He must live up to it. But others can remove it from him. And that means the chacham. And all of these support psukim, nevertheless, do not stop the Mishnah from saying, the Torah doesn't say it anywhere explicitly. This whole concept that you can revoke a neder is something that was handed down from Moshe. Now, it may well be that in order for the Midas Hadin to be intact, for absolute judgment to be intact, whatever is within the rules falls into Midas Hadin. A violation of Midas Hadin would be, you want to do something that's not in the rule book, right? But if the rule says that this is the way it goes, then that's Midas Hadin. Now, inasmuch as there is such a thing in Din, in the Din of Torah, that if a person has made a neder and it's binding, and it can be demonstrated that he made this neder under false pretenses, and he has a sincere regret for having made the neder, and he wished that he never would have made the neder, that the halacha is then that neder can be revoked like it never occurred. Because that's what happens when you, a chacham, is mater a neder, annuls a neder. It's not that it is cut off from the day of the annulment, but it's retroactive. The neda is, it was made under false pretenses, so we assume, we act as though the neda never happened. And it goes retroactive. Inasmuch as now that is the halacha, then that fits into Midas Hadin. Then the Midas Hadin is that it is possible to retroactively annul something that occurred. Now, since that's Midas Hadin in halacha, right, that can be Midas Hadin for Hashem. So it is not a violation of Midas Adin to say that a person who does tshuva can extirpate the incident as though it never occurred. Say, hey, where do you see that? I mean, that's not Midas Adin. I said, sure, it's Midas Adin. It happens all the time. It happens by neder. So it may well be that Hashem put this whole business of extirpating your neder into din. So that, if that be, since that now becomes halacha, then Hashem can allow tshuva to extirpate a past act without violating his own midas adin. Then maybe the purpose is to why had that a dogam are so necessary. Vehuma she'omer hakosu, and this is what Yeshaya says: the sora v'necha, your wrong will depart, v'chatoscha techupar, and your sin will be forgiven. Meaning, not only is it forgiven, but v'sor avinecho, it is, the sin will depart, she'ha'ovein sor mamish mamitzius, that when their proper tshuva is done, the act is considered as it never happened, v'necho, and it is extirpated and completely removed, v'masha achshav mitztair u'misnachem amasha elam afeya, with the fact that he is now in remorse over what happened. So a person with tshuva has the opportunity to undo the past. Now, even though in human secular courts that never happens, I mean, you can make restitution, but you don't undo something that was done. That's because human secular law is human and we're limited. But for Hashem, in this respect, Hashem undoes the past. The thing never happened. Now, why then?
If Nathan was still dead, huh? Hunters still walking the earth. I mean, it's like it never happened, but it happened.
Well, in reality, it happened.
In actuality, it's not undone. It's as if it
happened. It's as if it never happened. Now, in in secular law, the best you can do is restitution and forgiveness, and withhold punishment, but there is no way of considering as if the act never happened. Now, if this is so, then why do we sometimes find references to v'chatosi negdi somid, I will always keep my sin before my eyes? The reason for that is that even though the act is as if it never happened, but the individual realizes, I had the vulnerability and I had the capacity to do that. In other words, you know, this is, we always talk in psychiatry on predictability of violence. Can you, from a person's mental status, predict whether he's going to be violent or not? The only good guide is, has he ever done it? If a person has done something violent, clearly he's capable of doing something violent. And it's not a psychiatric decision. It's a question of, no one can judge really a person's capacity for violence. But the best indication for there being violence is, has the person been violent in the past? Now, if a person has done an aver, even though he may sincerely regret it, and even though it's removed as if it never occurred, but nevertheless, the fact was that he had the capacity to do this thing, which is as if it never happened. And if he had the capacity to do it, he had the vulnerability to do it, then he must be on his guard to recognize that that is something that's within his capacity to repeat. So it's not that I've got to go around regretting my sin. Once you've done tshuva, it's a proper tshuva, and the sin is extirpated. And you don't go about obsessing and ruminating over it. Because all that does is cause depression and takes away a person's energies to function properly. But nevertheless, the person should have an awareness that this thing, if this thing did occur, then I've got to be cautious because I may be capable of repeating it another time. Now, this extirpation and of a sin, making it as though it never happened, zech chesed vada she'enu mishuvas adin, that's not absolute din. Achal koponim, nevertheless, hinehu chesed she'enu makrish adin negamra, it is not completely opposed to din. It's not incompatible with absolute judgment. Shariyesh sadli tolis, boy, there's logical reason to say that in the place of the will to do the sin and whatever gratification he got from it, that has now been sufficiently satisfied and made restitution. Now his distress at having done it and his regret then cancels out the original intent of the sin. The fact that a person is given a grace period, that is not overlooking the sin. It is a kind of patience to give the person a chance to make the rectification. Similarly with everything else that belongs to chesed. For Kenyan, that although a person has died, now that his children do good deeds, their virtue can help the father. Now, but the father wasn't any good. The father was a sinful person. Yeah, but the fact that the son turned out to do mitzvahs and to do properly, that must be that there was some positive influence from the father as well. That whatever can be ascribed to him is ascribed to him. Oy mitzvahs nefesh kechola nefesh. Right? Taking part of a life is like taking the whole of a life. Depriving a person of his belongings can be equivalent to taking his life. So that a person can be spared his life and lose his assets, and that will be considered in place of a capital judgment. All of these things that are mentioned in the words of the sages, these are conditions of mercy where small amounts are counted as large amounts, but they are not absolutely contradictory to justice, because there's legitimate reason to consider them. For anybody who's going to say Hashem will overlook, that's not overlooking. That Hashem will not pay attention to them, that would totally contradict justice. There would be no true justice then. That can't possibly happen. If none of the ways of tshuva can be found for the individual to escape the consequences of his actions, then justice will have its way, and he will have the consequences. The Gemara says, "Mare chape, Hashem may withhold his wrath, begover delay, but he will collect what is due." Nimzor comes out, "Shein l'adam haroitzel lefkei achenov," that a person who wants to open his eyes to the truth cannot allow himself pitoy, cannot allow himself a delusion. Sheyuchal he's patish boy, that he's allowed to seduce himself with the delusion. Levilti zor b'maisav, that he should not be cautious in his actions, tachlis hazilus, with absolute caution, uladak begum tachlis adikto, again, subjecting them to the most thorough and careful analysis, because everything will be brought under scrutiny. Hein kol eila hashkofes yashkif alayin, these are all observations that a person should take into account. The yikin abahem midas hazilus vada im bal nevishu, and if he's a person, a spiritual person, then these are the things which will enable him to acquire the attribute of watchfulness. To be continued.